Well, of my whatever time I have, I want to take a brief 30 seconds to further embarrass Jerry. I just want to talk about what will happen today and tomorrow. You know, every time I try to have a conversation around synthetic biology to geoengineering, I'm told it's scientific, looking at me as if like, you don't get it, it's scientific. Most of us have been told these are issues that are best left to the scientists, best left to the regulatory agencies, because they know what they're doing. So we can go ahead and continue our shopping or whatever we need to do. The next 2 days remind me of what I've personally gone through when IFG has organized teach-ins, whether it was around World Trade Organization in Seattle in 99, or when I just learned about this whole global economy teach-ins in 94, actually in New York. My first arrest actually in the United States happened because I went to the teach-in. Because that information that you get and that spillover that happens, that we need to take back the democratic spaces, that's what these teachings have done for many, many of us. So I want all of us to just turn around and give a big hand to Jerry and the team that has been putting this together. Technology, I don't know how to use. Oh, it does work, sometimes. I'm here to talk about stealing nature, but also about stealing life. Our history has been pockmarked where these top-down development solutions, the silver bullet solutions that have always been sent around to the world, especially the global south, which are based on technology. This technocratic approach to development, people sitting in Washington, D.C., in Geneva, and Brussels, they know better. In 2008, there was a food price crisis, where the food prices increased by over 83% between 2007-2008. And suddenly, there was a renewed focus and interest in agriculture. At the same time, there was a financial crisis. Pension fund investors, they were suddenly looking for the next soft commodity to invest in. The result of the crisis, these two crises, food crisis, financial crisis, has been corporations let loose on the developing world. This is a quest for virgin lands, for virgin forests, looking for minerals underground, creating a land rush that no developing country has escaped. So seeking this next soft commodity to invest in has resulted in land and water grabs, whether it is in Africa, which is worst affected, or Asia, Latin America, the Pacific Islands. The whole thing is couched in a language of sustainability. It'll create jobs. It'll bring technological innovation to this dark continent. It'll create jobs. It'll help elevate lives, end poverty. And at the same time, talking about advertising, there's a drumming of this fear. How will we feed this growing population? We need to go and invest in agriculture through corporations the way it is happening. How will we meet this insatiable appetite of China and India? We need RED schemes. We need carbon credit offset schemes so we can continue to consume the way we do in the north. And the answer lies in these lands far away in Africa, in Latin America, Asia. The whole idea of this advertising is that technological innovation, industrial plantations, will remake Africa. They will help feed not just Africa, but help feed the world. They will save the world. The key pillar of this land and life grab is technology and infrastructure, genetically engineered seeds. Farmers, 80% of the food consumed in the developing world comes from smallholder farmers. But in this approach, this top-down approach, these smallholder farmers, if they're not in the export economy, they're useless, they're not successful. They have to be replaced and turned into plantation workers in these large plantations. As Jerry mentioned at the Oakland Institute, we have been looking at the impact of these land deals around the world. We have done very detailed country reports, Ethiopia, Mozambique, South Sudan, United States, Papua New Guinea. Having looked at hundreds and hundreds of land deals, I can share some basic findings. One is, if this is such an amazing solution, there's no transparency around it. You know, you think you can go to Lusaka and Zambia and you can get the listing of all the land deals, the lands that have been taken away. Not possible. You go to Mozambique, you go to Ethiopia, there's no information. You have to get to the ground where you meet communities who woke up to find bulldozers you know, destroying their homes, destroying their fields. Free, prior, informed consent, none of that. These people, these villagers who have no postal addresses, do not have a title deed which says it is their land. You don't need to consult with them. Why are they all headed to places like Africa? It's the price of land. You find the most fertile lands for which you would pay $14,000 to $17,000 per hectare in the US, or $26,000 or $28,000 in the UK. People are getting 99-year leases for which they pay as low as 40 cents per hectare. Hectare is the size of a football field. So there were deals that I saw by a US former ambassador of refugee affairs. In South Sudan, he managed to get 1 million hectares of land for $25,000. With the right to cut down teak and precious wood that was on that land, he could grow whatever he wanted, from corn to agrofuels. They could even do under the ground digging for minerals, for oil, and had the right to sublease it. They talk about benefits to communities. Over and over again, we found what it results in: people displaced, people who grew food for their families, for their communities, turned into plantation workers. Or as one investor told me in Tanzania, who got the largest land deal, when I asked him, "You have such a great deal, what did you have to promise?" And his response was, "The government is very sensible. They know that we won't be hiring the local people. We will hire South Africans." Kept quiet for a second, looked at me again, and then he said, "White South Africans?" Who are these investors? Who's driving it? We were stunned. Usually we hear, "Oh, it's the Chinese investors." We found investors from everywhere. Jerry mentioned Harvard University, Vanderbilt, to pension funds. How many of you have money in TIAA-CREF, TIAA-CREF? That's one of the biggest, largest land grabbers in this world, which is heavily investing in land for speculative purposes. Land is seen as the next gold, in fact, better than gold, because it's not just the prices are increasing, but you can rent it out and do other things to it. So let me share a few examples of it. This is Heraklis, since we're in New York. I talked about the language of sustainability. Heraklis Farms went to Cameroon, managed to get a 99-year lease on 73,000 hectares of land. It is committed to sustainability. What it doesn't tell its investors, these 73,000 hectares are in the world's second largest rainforest. The plan is to cut down the rainforest to put in place a palm forest. The next one, just Sockfin, again talking about advertising. This is Bolloré Group from France, one of the Fortune 500 companies in Sierra Leone. The idea is, again, through belonging to RSPO, to take over communities' lands, and they've been fighting back, and instead put in a palm oil plantation. In fact, the people who protested, it's been 5 years now, have been facing a lawsuit for defamation and for fighting for their resources and their land from Sockfin. Some of them are more honest. This is Mvest, a company from England which invested in Mozambique and Zambia and Swaziland, and they were more honest. They're breaking new land. Their ideology is that you need to invest in land because we have to feed China, and the second area you should invest in is arms because we will go to war with China. And these are the strategic relationships. This is a slide from an investor called AgriSoul from Iowa. Belongs to Bruce Rastetter, the Republican kingmaker who owned the third largest ethanol plant. But this says it all. The idea for taking over the largest land deal in Tanzania was they can bring Syngenta and Pioneer and the banks together to revolutionize what agriculture will look like in Tanzania. But let me just share what really happens. This is through mapping that we did, the impact of Heraklis Farms in Cameroon. After cutting down, they were hoping to cut down 73,000 hectares of this forest in Cameroon and put in the palm oil plantations. By exposing them and revealing what their real intent was, today that land deal has been reduced to a temporary lease of 3 years, and from 73,000 hectares to 19,000 hectares. It's still 19,000 hectares too much, and the communities are still organizing to get this company out of their lands and the forests. This is SOCFIN, the promise of sustainability in Sierra Leone. When I visited them first, this area first, they were homes. They were small fields that belonged to the farmers who lived on the land, who were forcefully evicted, and you have this barren soil there. This is Ethiopia. Ethiopia, which desires to become Africa's lion. This is going to be the Renaissance state, which using technology is building the largest dam in Africa. It plans to displace 1.5 million indigenous people. Whether it's the Suris or the Mursis or Surmas or the Nyangatams or the Anuaks, and as we speak, in Gambela, killings are happening so people can be evicted. So the Karaturis of this world, so Ruchi Soya, or the other cotton and sugar plantations can happen on their lands. This happens while United States, England continue to finance and provide funding for Ethiopia for development, because this is what development and renaissance looks like. It might sound like after saying this is going to be an important 2 days, these are pretty depressing news when we look at the number of people being displaced, when we see our forests being destroyed, when we see people who depend on minor forest produce and the wildlife and biodiversity that remains on this land, the threat it faces. But what keeps us going, whether it has been Papua New Guinea, or whether it is Ethiopia, or whether it is Zambia, one thing that we've been told over and over again, this is our land, this is where we were born, and this is where we will die. No government, no corporation can kick us out. No technological solution can feed us the way we have fed ourselves. So resistance is happening. It's leading to conflict, sometimes violent conflicts, which cannot be condoned. But let me give you a few examples. This is in Papua New Guinea, where people mobilized. And nobody would have thought a nation which has given away over 11 million hectares of land to logging companies, or given away land to so-called palm oil developers under special agriculture business leases. The president of Papua New Guinea this year had to come out and cancel illegal deals this year, which has taken back 5 million hectares of land. It is possible. This is in Argentina. This is a plantation owned by Harvard University, which is destroying the lands, the livelihoods, and the environment of the local people. Imagine a community in a small village in Argentina rising up to Harvard University. Is that happening? Yes, it is. We just don't hear about it. This one is one of the most beautiful stories that I would like to share. I mentioned the largest land deal in Tanzania. Bruce Rastetter, AgriSoul Summit Farms. They managed to get this land deal, the largest in the country, while nobody knew about it in Tanzania. 800,000 acres. They wanted the government to change the regulations so they could grow GMO corn. They wanted the government to take a World Bank loan so a railway line could be put between their farms and to the port. They wanted this area, which was classified as a special watershed under Ramsar Convention, they wanted it to be classified differently so they could pour in as many pesticides and herbicides as they wanted. More important, they forgot to mention that actually people lived on that land. They said nobody lives on that land. These 800,000 acres were over 3 different plots. And just in one area, in Katumba, over 160,000 smallholders lived. These are people who came as refugees over 40 years ago. They were told by the government that we'll give you citizenship, finally, after 40 years, when most of them, actually half the population, was born in Tanzania, spoke Swahili, knew nothing about Burundi or DRC or Somalia. They were told, we'll give you citizenship papers if you break down your own home and the churches that you have built. If you bring it all down, we'll give you $100 and a citizenship papers and tell you where to go. This is the Dracula when it was brought out into the sunlight. It had no place to hide. It had no place to run. Just last week, the people living on that land, 160,000 people, got the citizenship papers, and there's no need to move. They will stay on their lands. They will farm the land, and they will take care of the biodiversity, and they will take care of that watershed area, and they will have, and they have in fact sent a strong message to the government that large lands schemes that you bring in as your development will not happen. I would just say, so what can we do about it? Because communities are rising and fighting back. How can we? How can we, who so depend on these communities, the food that's grown in the rest of the world, how can we support them and join the struggle? At the Institute, we got a little tired of going, you know, case by case by case, AgriSol and others, till you look at who are the drivers of this. And guess who it is? One of the biggest ones is the World Bank. Remember that institution? The World Bank. World Bank actually does doing business rankings. It ranks countries on what they like to do business with. So if you as Sri Lanka say that, you know, following the war crimes that we did towards the Tamil, we still have all that land and we're going to, instead of returning it to the Tamils, we'll give it to corporations, you get a good ranking. You as Liberia say, hey, as a foreign investor, you want to come in, we are not going to ask you to do environmental impact assessment, you get an even better ranking. And then you as Sierra Leone say, get what? I just got rid of minimum wage requirements. These rankings are not based on the well-being of the nation, the communities, environment. They're based on how low you're willing to go, creating a race to the bottom. So at the Institute, we have launched a campaign that we are pleased to report is now supported by over 260 organizations around the world, including trade unions, farmer groups, community groups, people impacted. It's called Our Land, Our Business, not the World Bank's doing business. In fact, this institution never held polls in our countries to ask for the right to be able to do a report card on the nations. Who gave it the right to do any kind of ranking? It just usurped that right. So the campaign's hashtag, if you're onto Twitter, I know tweeting won't save the world, is hashtag world versus bank. This is really about a democratic space. This is about our biodiversity. This is about our food systems. The world has always known how to feed, how to clothe, how to provide jobs with dignity. The problem is how to remove those in power who prevent that from happening. We live in the belly of the beast. And very often, we are told all this is legal. You know, there are regulations around GMOs. It is legal for a food to be contaminated. It is legal for the poor, the pastoralists, the indigenous, to be expelled from their lands. You know, speaking at a teaching organized by IFG in Hawaii, as I was speaking and sharing that it's all legal, I realized, and I said, you know, segregation was legal. Women didn't have a right to vote. That was legal. And I was shocked at myself because I said, fuck legal. And I have actually learned we need to say that, fuck legal.